Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
This is a Character Animation Bootcamp private class podcast, a cavalcade of character animation wisdom for your cranium.
Brazilian animator and director Henrique Barone has been creating a huge splash in the world of motion design through his work at Giant Ant. And we were very lucky to get the chance to talk to such an amazing artist. His work is very informed by traditional hand-drawn classical character animation, but it's equally informed by modern design and modern animation techniques, blending all kinds of styles and techniques together to create a really rich and varied look, something that Henrique really strives for in his work. You may be familiar with some of the pieces that Henrique has created at Giant Ant, like the amazing 2D-3D hybrid, The Toms Story, which is about the Toms Shoes Company, and the Kick Plastic PSA they did for Costa Sunglasses with beautiful design by Lucas Brooking, and The Closer, which is a really neat music video using baseball characters and a baseball diamond. That's just naming a few of the brilliant pieces that Henrique has been a part of creating. Now, in the course of the conversation, Henrique and I occasionally start using some sort of more old-fashioned, kind of more hand-drawn character animation terms that you might not be familiar with. We'll discuss those at the end of the interview just to make sure you understood fully what it was we were talking about. So enjoy this terrific conversation with the brilliant Henrique Barone. So Henrique, thank you very much for talking to us and taking the time to talk to us today. I want to start by just talking about how you got into this. How did you fall in love with character animation? You obviously love it. How did you fall in love with it? How did you start on this path?
So when I my first course was, it wasn't actually like character animation. I started doing graphic design, and it comes back to the kind of like the thing that when you're a kid you don't really know what you want. Like I knew I liked to draw. Mm-hmm. And then I needed to study something that it has something to do with drawing, right? And
right.
The most obvious choice was design for me at the time. Mm-hmm. And then it was graphic design, actually. And then during the course, we had a little bit of character animation, like some classes, which kind of started to show me like what I could do with animation. But what actually like started pushing me in this direction, it was the first time we went to this animation festival in Brazil. It's called Anima Mundi.
Yes.
And that was amazing. There was so many different kinds of shorts, and like there was no defined style. Like
right.
We went to a session and it was like a cutout short followed by a 3D, followed by a hand drawn, or like,
yeah,
like all these different techniques.
Yes.
And you can't help but like leave the festival with the feeling that you can animate.
Uh-huh.
You can do something.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's so like so that was the spark that it started me to think about animation as a career, or at least as something that I would like to explore at that time.
Right, right.
And so I kind of started moving my graphic design course into more into animation, to the point that my graduation, it was an animated film.
Oh, wow.
And from there, I got my first job as an intern in an animation studio in Brazil. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's basically how it started.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
So did you have some kind of early animation heroes? You mentioned the festival. Were there some animators in particular that kind of really grabbed your attention, or even animation that you saw when you were a kid that you responded to?
Not really specific. Like as a kid, I would mention like kind of like old like Bugs Bunny cartoons and the kind of stuff.
Sure.
And then, during the festival, like, they sell catalogs at the festival, so I started, like, looking up for names. I can't remember. like a name in specific now.
Right.
Because like I said, it's like so many, and like sometimes it's just one short that you see, and like, I like this short, and then
you go
look on the internet, and there's nothing at the time.
right.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
but you were definitely struck by all the different styles and all the different techniques.
Yeah. And then the second time, third time, you start like noticing like some names in the festival.
Sure.
Like I said, it's weird to think back now that internet wasn't really around. It was, but not really.
Right. Not the way it is now.
Because I remember like going to the festival for the second time and actually like getting to know Gobelin and like other studios because of the festival and not because of the internet.
Right. Yes. Right. Well, that was, and it was amazing back then too, because you would go see an amazing short in a festival, and the festival would move on, and you would never see or hear of it again.
Yeah,
it just
kind
of disappear.
Yeah.
Right. It's wonderful that these things are being sort of preserved in a way on the internet, and some of those old ones are starting to be discovered again too, which is really great. But yeah, it was a different time.
There was this one short from what's his name? It's called like Love and Death.
Love and Death. Oh, I'm not sure I remember that one.
We're all Googling it at the same time.
So it's like from this studio in Germany. It's called like Film Builder. And it's called like Andreas Ricada. It was also like staff peak and all that. It's like just a bunch of like faces being morphed.
Oh,
I remember seeing that on the festival. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah.
Super colorful, super like, I don't know, cool timing, just simple.
Right. So that kind of got you into things. How did you end up studying classical animation? What was your next step?
So yeah, like after, like I said, like my graduation was like a film. It was actually like a pilot for a TV series, which was the say like the obvious way to go in a way, to work with TV series, because that's in Brazil at least that's a big field.
Sure.
And well, here is even bigger. not just in Brazil, it's a big field anywhere.
Yeah.
And. And I was also doing Flash for my graduation film, and going for a TV series, it seemed like the right path.
Right.
So I started work as an intern on that animation studio. And then I did some freelances and worked for a while in São Paulo for 3 years. And then, like, I don't know, after 3 years, it kind of felt like stopping for a bit again and actually going to study animation. Because like I said, I did like graphic design and I was working with animation, but I didn't actually have like any background on character animation. Like at that point I had never learned like principles and...
Right.
And we were also like me and my wife, who was also like always with me. She's the designer animator too. And we both... Like the graduation film is actually like me and her together, and then we started working the same studio.
Oh, great!
And like after 3 years in São Paulo, we kind of felt that feel like a good time to stop for a bit and maybe like kind of learn animation for real, and also like as a personal move to like give some time for ourselves a little bit.
Oh, that's great! So were you finding?
Go ahead. No, and then like the 1 year course at classical animation at VFS, it felt like a good fit. Like 1 year in Canada, studying classical animation, not in Brazil, is a different experience. So like you combine like a professional and a personal move in a way.
Right. Yeah.
It was a really, really great experience.
Yeah, so can you talk just a little bit about the? I know it's a complex program, but it's an amazing program. Can you talk a little bit about the program and how it works and kind of what you study in that intense year?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing I like the most. It is an intense year, and you know it beforehand, so you kind of came prepared.
Okay, yeah.
And well, at least we came prepared.
Yeah.
The first 6 months is basically like just assignments, like starting like bouncing ball and then like flower sack and then like a little bit of character, then like the final assignment is like acting assignments,
right?
And throughout the 6 months, you don't just have like animation assignments, and that's a big plus for
right.
us about the course. You got like character design classes,
right?
And composition classes and color classes,
right?
And storyboard. So the first 6 months is really like building up the base,
right?
Mm-hmm. And with that base, you go to the second semester, which is like to produce your film.
Okay.
And I don't know, to produce your film, for me, is one of the best ways to learn not just how to animate, but like how to time manage and
right.
and have an idea, which is for me still the hardest part of any project.
Yes.
It's not just like a big assignment, it's your film. So you want to put effort on it and the story and like
right, right, yeah.
Think about the characters and what they think and
right.
Why are you doing this story? That kind of thing.
Right, sure. So
and so that's the second semester.
Okay.
You do your film, and then in the last month. So no, I'm wrong. You do your film in 5 months, and then in the last month is your flash film. You just have a month.
Oh, okay, okay. Oh, wow.
And it's basically to teach you like the software.
Okay.
You don't actually need to do like a short, although like it's recommended, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just want to do like a short piece, so you get to know like cutout animation and a bit flash.
Right, right.
And I actually like it. I don't know. It's never about the software. So you have the principles and you get a taste of the software and you can explore later.
Right, right. For yeah. sure. Sure. And that was Tough West, right? The flash
yeah,
film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. I love the design in that piece. It's just yeah. the design is so tasty. It's just great.
Cool.
Yeah. Good
Thank
stuff.
So
really, really good
yeah.
stuff.
It's funny because it was just a month and I think that's my favorite one. I don't know why. Like, I think because it was just a month, there wasn't enough time for you to overthink stuff.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't know, it just came out so well. And the voice and the guys who worked with me doing the music is like they added so much. And
yeah,
it was great. Yeah,
it's a really strong piece. It's a really, really great piece.
Yeah,
it's a lot even yeah. for a month. Even for a month, that's still a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, like I had like previous experience with Flash, like I said, working in the animation studio back
sure,
in Brazil.
Sure, yeah,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, 1 month is kind of a tight schedule, yeah.
It's pretty intense, pretty intense.
And it's like from scratch, right? Like you have your idea, you do the storyboard, and then you animate, and then you...
Wow, yeah, right, the whole thing.
There,
yeah, right, right. Yeah, yeah, that's a tight turnaround.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about, you touched on it really briefly, about the kind of acting approach to learning classical animation, that you're thinking about the performance of the character. Can you talk about how they approach that at VFS?
We worked on this mostly on our final films.
Okay.
We had, before the final films, we get some, like, story classes.
Sure.
And then we have, like, I don't know, we talk more about character and, like, thinking process and acting and all that. And
yes.
we have, like, three assignments before the film, as far as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, three. That are mostly acting.
Okay.
And
are you... Do you mean like acting yourself, like you are acting, or you're, doing
like,
animation exercises with a character
more likely,
performing?
Yeah, more like an animation exercise, like
sure.
a guy entering the room and he needs to do this.
Right, right.
Like what does he have in mind and why is he acting this way? And then you, like from that, you think about the poses and
right.
you might do a gag, you might do like a, I don't know, leave the audience with a question mark. And
sure, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, so yeah, it's more like an actual, more an assignment.
Right, right.
And then, of course, they recommend for you to act it out and, like, try to put yourself in the character's mind. And the...
Sure, sure.
But then, like, the moments where you actually, like, practice all the knowledge that you got in this, like, quick three assignments is in your film.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
Then
so,
you
like
really...
So, like I said, like, the first 6 months is basically, like, gathering you knowledge and information and, like, putting you on the mood to produce your piece.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, after this intense year of studying classical character, you know, kind of where were you at after that year? What were kind of the big ideas that you didn't have going into the course that you did have coming out of the course? Like, what did you walk away with that you didn't have coming in?
You mean, like, in terms of animation or in terms of, like, what's my next move kind of thing?
No, no, I think more in terms of animation, since the students with this class are really focusing on learning character animation specifically. What about character animation specifically? What were some of the big ideas or maybe the kind of important skills that you picked up when you were at VFS?
Well, like I said, I had, like, no actual, like, knowledge of principles before coming to VFS, so like even like basic stuff like easing in, easing out, or antic, like I knew about it, but I had never like actually studied it.
Right.
And I don't know, like it's so. After this 1 year at VFS, I look at your animation a completely different way.
Right.
And like basically because I learned the principles, which you. They weren't like really like hard to learn, and they weren't many actually.
Right. That's true.
It's basically like you slow down when you need to slow down.
Yeah.
You speed it up and you just speed it up. And
little overlap and follow through.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And basically like getting you to move, right?
Right. Sure.
But like those principles, they weren't hard. What is hard for me is like I said, like to. It kind of comes back to drawing, especially when it's hand drawn. Not just when it's hand drawn, but also like when it's After Effects or 3D. The hardest things for me is to get the right pose.
Yes.
Is to get like if you get the right pose, then the principles are easy.
Yes.
It's gonna crush in this pose and comes out of this pose quick.
Right.
Arm gonna be here first. Leg's gonna come here a little bit later.
Right.
And but if you don't have the pose there. It all falls apart, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's that intersection of posing and timing, right? It's applying those principles, which are mostly about timing, to those poses and those two things together. And you really kind of have to have both, right? I mean, you can have great poses, but if you don't have the timing there, it also kind of falls apart, right? Yeah. Great. Well,
but like that said, it's also... Like I said, like when I was like in the animation class, so you see like so many different stuff.
Right.
That it's almost like there's no way like going wrong.
Sure.
I mean, especially if you're doing like an independent piece or like a thing for yourself.
Yeah.
That's what I love in animation too. Like even I saw in the animation class, but now like I see in Vimeo, like every day, like here you go to your feed and it's like. You just see different stuff, and like you can't say that's wrong.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. If it's interesting, and if it's clearly something that's made with passion and has a great idea or beautiful design. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so much comes down to the big ideas like character and story, right? That if that's there, then like you said, you almost can't do wrong. It's all kind of window dressing almost.
Yeah,
after
exactly.
That. Yeah. Great. Well, you kind of talked about, one of the hardest things for you being coming up with the big idea. Was that sort of the hardest, coming up with the ideas, I guess, for your pieces? You said that was sort of one of the hardest things for you.
That was the hardest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. In animation, you talked about getting the poses right, that was, maybe the most difficult thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What did you learn about character animation specifically that you thought was the most important thing? What did you think, specifically looking at animation, what was the kind of most important thing you learned studying classical?
Mm-hmm. Like literally in terms of like the technique?
Sure. Yeah. Or even a big idea. I mean, is it maybe we've already hit it. Is it the poses? Is that the most important thing that classical training kind of taught you? Or
yeah, not just the poses, but like the whole process in a way. One thing that I found me like struggling with like later a little bit, like after I finished classical, and then I kind of had a little bit of a gap before I actually started to do like classical or like classically based animations again.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I had this little bit of a drop gap. And I was doing like more flash cutout. And then I noticed that I was actually like forgetting like the process, not just the poses.
Right.
But like to start with the pose and then like to think like how this pose will communicate to this next pose. And then you think about the breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
Then once you get your breakdown done, you start thinking about like easing ins and easing outs. So the whole process, like as a step-by-step thing, that's the thing that I would say it was the most important thing to that I've learned.
Sure, sure.
And it's easy to forget about that, and like especially in computer, right? Like
yeah.
If you're actually doing paper, it's like you need to follow that process. If not, like
right.
And like on the computer, you kind of just like kind of start doing here, and then you don't actually think about the process, and then like I don't know, like one day. The day is over and you feel that you didn't actually like, produce anything. that like nothing is working actually.
Yeah.
And at least for me, it was like, okay, just like calm down and think back about the process. Like think your pose.
Yeah.
Think your breakdown.
Yeah.
Do your charts. And like, so that's the thing that helped me.
Great.
Yeah. And then like, I think like as you go, that process is more in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels right to like not think about it because yeah, I have it, I got it,
right?
But no, I always kind of need to say myself, remember that there's a process behind it, right?
Right, absolutely. Oh, I agree 100%, 100%. Yeah.
But like, as you go, you start kind of getting the feel more of the poses and things starts getting faster.
Sure.
But it's not that the process is not there.
Right, exactly. It just becomes kind of internalized and it just kind of comes naturally. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
And it's interesting talking about the translation into digital, which is kind of what I want to talk about next. And, you know, I did that same thing. I started, you know, doing classical hand-drawn animation, painted on cel, shot on film in the early 90s, and then literally saw everything shift to digital, and I was able to kind of get on board with that. But I agree 100% that the process still has to be there. Even if you're applying the tricks and techniques that the software gives you, you still have to have that foundation underneath there.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your more recent work, especially with Giant Ant. And there's obviously, it's incredibly strong hand-drawn, either influence or actual hand-drawn animation in a lot of this work. And you can see that if there's not actual hand-drawn, you're building off of hand-drawn, you know, as a base in a lot of the work, yes. So maybe we could talk about a couple of these specifically and I'd love for you to kind of talk about that process between the kind of classical hand-drawn and how you work with the digital animation and digital animators in the process. With for example, Kick Plastic, which has such a beautiful style. How did you work back and forth between the hand-drawn elements and the digital elements?
So that's hard because it's so different for each project.
Sure. Well, let's just focus on Kick Plastic, for example.
Like, yeah. So that one, for example, on that one, I did just like rough passes, like line passes.
Okay.
And the only scene that I actually like got to finish is the one that the bird like flies and comes down to the bottom.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Like for that one, I did like the line pass and then I cleaned up, cleaned up like in Flash, like just like retracing it.
Sure, sure. And you're using, I'm so sorry to interrupt, but you're using Flash to do your frame by frame? Or,
I basically use Flash for like most of what I do.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. And like the bird was like a line pass at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like a cleanup pass, which I was actually, like I said, like cleaning up in Flash like with Vector.
Sure.
Because that piece has like a super like Vector look, or it's with like straight lines and all that.
Right, right.
But for the other scenes, I wasn't, because I was going back to Brazil when we were doing this project to get married. And so I didn't have time to work on other scenes. So I just did the rough passes. And then the guys there who do like amazing After Effects,
yeah,
they actually got this line pass that I did, and they were tracing After Effects.
Okay.
Like using masks and shapes and
sure.
Like, yeah. Then it's a different process for like each one, I think.
Sure.
Oh, so, but like yeah. mostly getting colors to the line pass and like making it work, right?
Right, yeah. And it looks like there's a few 3D elements too in the piece. Are there some 3D elements?
Is. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yes. That's this bottle shot.
Yeah.
It's all 3D, and so yeah, they also had like a line pass, which was then brought to 3D and like as a guide.
Right, yeah.
And
yeah, it's a great blend of styles.
That was actually the first one that I, which is something we are actually exploring more, like me doing more like line passes.
Right.
And like we're doing one piece now that I'm doing line passes, and then there's a Photoshop pass.
Okay. Oh, sure. Yeah.
So the line pass is in Flash, and then it goes to Photoshop.
Right.
To actually like paint frame by frame.
Right.
It's basically the same process as doing like a line pass in Flash, and then a different software. It can be After Effects. It can be 3D.
Sure. Sure.
And it can also be Photoshop, right?
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Are you using Anim Desen in Photoshop? Yeah. Yeah, great.
We are. Such a good plugin.
Yeah. Right? Isn't it awesome? Yeah.
And Morgan. Yeah. It's amazing. Just as a noob, as the least experienced character animator on the call right now, what can you define what a line pass is? I think I might know what you're talking about, but some of the students and myself included, I probably have no idea what it is.
Yeah, well,
go ahead. Go ahead.
No, Enrique, oh. you should definitely answer. No. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically like it's actually like the animation pass. It's like when you see like a making of for movies. And you see just like pencil, say like old movies, you just see the pencil pass. That's the line pass.
I got it. So there's no color, no shading yet. It's just the drawing, just, basically.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
Right. You got it. And the drawings can be looser or tighter depending on the production and depending on the style of the artist. You know, sometimes you start real rough.
A good point.
Yeah. And in the old days, we used to call them pencil tests. You know, you just do the pencil drawings and then shoot them and test them. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's great.
But that's a good point. You can do like a rough line pass or like a rough pencil pass.
Right.
And then you go and you do like a cleanup pencil pass.
Right.
And then the cleanup can be super like actually like cleaned up. So whoever is like repainting or retracing, it has like a really good base.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can also be more like a rough line pass. It's more like a guide.
Right.
It's not like super, super precise.
Right.
And then it depends on the style, on the schedule.
Right.
Different things come to play on that. Right? But it's always better to try to get it like super tight, right?
Right, absolutely. Well, and you know, we should mention that on your awesome website, you have a lot of these kind of breakdowns where you show some of those rough guide line passes. Exactly. So you can actually go and see some of that work. It's really cool. It's really cool to see those early passes and stuff and see that hand-drawn look.
Yeah.
And
that's where I have the most fun.
Is it? Yeah.
It's like white stage. You're just like, okay. And then I usually get like a style frame from whoever is directing the piece.
Right.
And I go from there, and it's like the first pass, the really like the rough pass, that's what I have more fun.
Yeah. How about the closer? Can you what was the process on the closer?
Similar to that one. It's like it was like a line pass. It was like a rough line pass.
Uh-huh.
And then I start like cleaning up with like flash pieces.
Right.
That's the thing that I like to do. Is like because it's weird because I came from Flash before doing classical animation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I kind of have like both backgrounds in a way.
Right.
And I find interesting to mix them.
Yeah.
And I know Flash has this like that looks flashy or that's too cut out or like.
Right.
And I really don't think that that's the case. I think like that's a super good software.
Yeah.
to do like both like frame by frame and cutout. If you do like a really good cutout in Flash, that can look like amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I like to do both. So like and mix both also.
Right.
Like
right.
And especially mix both.
Right.
Like, so for the closer, for example, I did like a line pass, and then I started like cleaning up the keyframes with Flash pieces.
Right, right. So you get so you get all the advantages of the cutout, but you get the fluidity of the hand drawn.
Exactly. Yeah. And then say like once the poses are there, and it's not the exact same piece.
Mm-hmm.
So say I did a rough pass, and like the hand is not the same, right?
Right.
So I'm basically like placing a symbol in Flash. It's just the same symbol, but it's not the same hand drawing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you can actually in between.
Right.
Like inside the symbol, you just like redraw the hand inside the symbol.
Sure.
Or like
sure.
In between the hand inside the symbol.
Right. Right.
And then I start like building up from these keyframes. So there's some points that you can actually use twin, like say for the arm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can just twin there, but then like the face, you can do a symbol and in between nose and eyes and
right.
And if there's like a frame that is more of a smear frame, you can actually go and just draw this frame. You don't need to use the pieces for that frame.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so the final Flash file is kind of a mix of like drawings and symbols and like it's
yeah right interesting
that are following the initial rough pass, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. That's great. It's really a unique look, and it definitely pushes.
You.
Oh, it really pushes the boundaries of what you think of as Flash animation, which is great. Really
yeah,
fun to see.
Cool.
How about Tom's story? That's one with a lot of 3D in it. Yes.
Yeah. Which shots you thinking?
Oh well, yeah. There's so many.
It's a long piece.
So cool. Yeah. Is this a situation where you guys were just kind of throwing, in terms of technique, everything on the table, whatever works for whatever shot? Was that kind of the approach? Because there's 2D and 3D and.
Yeah. I think Tom's was actually the first project I did as a Giant Ant employee, right?
Oh, okay. So this was your first one, huh? Amazing piece.
Yeah.
Such a cool piece.
I did like some other before as a freelance.
Mm-hmm.
And then was it Tom? Yeah, that was Tom. Yeah. And I remember like starting there, and it's like, yeah, we have this super long piece here. There's these shots with characters, and we thought you would be a good one to try to make them.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, yeah. And they kind of like gave me room to explore and like play with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would compose in After Effects later.
Okay, sure.
And that was basically it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like freedom actually to explore. And
yeah.
And it's one thing that I say about Giant Ant, like there's a crazy amount of trust going on between everyone.
Oh, that's great.
And it's like, I don't know, say like Jorge designed this frame and I think Enrique can animate.
Yeah,
I think I can. And then I animate and I don't know if you can comp that. Can you? yeah, I think I can. It's like, it seems that there's like all planned, but like, there's a lot of trust. It's amazing. It's you just see the thing like building up from an idea.
Sure.
And yeah, there is planning, of course.
Right.
But there's also like the surprises that come along it's just so cool.
Yeah, that's great. You know, and it's neat because, you know, one of the things that I think marks Giant Ant and certainly your work with Giant Ant is this blending of styles and techniques and different looks and things. And it's interesting when you talked about kind of where you first got your spark of inspiration at this festival where you saw all these different techniques and all these different styles.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of neat that you've ended up in a place that embraces that same diverse approach to animation.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I never thought about it. That's such a nice point.
Yeah, I think you certainly got yourself in the right spot, I think. That's great. That's super
great.
Yeah,
no, that's absolutely. I love it.
Yeah. Well,
I never actually like aiming to be on motion graphics actually. Like
sure.
I was like the obvious, not the obvious, but like the I mean, the path that I would take, it would be either, like, when I came here, it was like, okay, I'm gonna do like TV series or like feature film.
Sure.
Like, say, like, my goal was to be on Pixar or like right. big name movies.
Yeah.
And then, like, I ended up like going for motion graphics, and I think, like, nowadays I fit so much better in this field.
Yeah.
And it's actually because of this variety.
Yeah.
That, I never thought that it came from being on a festival. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like it's like 1 month, 2 month projects, and then it's another style, and then you got to explore different stuff. And
yeah. Yeah.
And I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I've kind of had the same experience coming from more of a traditional animation background, but I've ended up in the world of motion graphics, and I teach in a motion design department at Ringling, and you know, and it's kind of interesting that these worlds seem to be kind of coming together. You know, stepping outside of kind of the Pixar standard or Saturday morning cartoons, but into these more experimental hybrid styles that are really embraced in motion design. And so I think that's exactly why we're doing this course, is because there's a lot of motion design people that are now really, really keen on getting involved with character and sort of and vice versa. So it's really an interesting time, I think. So. Oh, that's great.
Oh, no, yeah. For me, it's like, I don't know. I mean, when you do a classical film, everybody loves classical stuff.
Yeah. Right?
So every time there is like a news that says like, there will be some 2D stuff coming up, everybody gets so excited.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like recently, like Brad Bird said that he wanted to do like a new 2D feature. And it's like, whoa, that would be so cool.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you see like the Peanuts movie.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's going to be 3D, but it. Like the designs are 2D.
Yes.
So it's like it's a really good, like, revisiting 2D stuff, but with the new technology that is around.
Right, right, yep.
And we passed through a phase that it was like, say, the Garfield. It's like, let's redo the character all in 3D, and it needs to look like, I don't know. Yeah. I think that the 2D has so much to offer, and like,
I agree.
Especially combined with 3D.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like the trailers for Peanuts, they just look amazing. Or like the Popeye teaser.
Yep.
Although I think they canceled it, right?
I think so. Yeah. But
yeah,
that
so
trailer
sad.
Was
but
so cool.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the same thing. It's like 2D designs, 2D timing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like cartoony, snap, but 3D looking. So it's like. It's a really cool mix. And it's happening in feature films and it's happening in motion graphics too.
Right,
it's
right.
Like you see more pieces, I don't know, like strong 2D or like character.
Right, yep.
At least I see. I follow that stuff.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. I feel like when going to Motionographer daily, I feel like we're seeing more and more character all the time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and lots of 2D and hybrids, which I'm really interested in too. That's awesome.
So one of the things that I think will be interesting, well, I know it'll be interesting to the students. It'll be interesting to me too, actually. Is you've got this piece on your website, The Man Who Saw a Boat, and it's a 3D character piece.
Yeah.
And when you were describing the process of how you use Flash, kind of as this hybrid tool where you can hand draw certain things, but then you can also tween or you can just duplicate a symbol and move it here and then move it here. But with a 3D character rig, and in the case of this class that we're teaching, a 2D character rig, you don't have all of those same options. And so I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, the approach you take when you're using a rigged character versus when you have the freedom to just draw whatever it is you need.
Well, that's the biggest difference between 2D and 3D. You feel more in a cage when you do 3D, and like the rig is actually like a cage, right?
Yeah.
And, I don't know, one thing I try to do, like when I do 3D, is to actually try to push the pose to the point that it works for the rig, but it's still like an interesting pose.
Is that the biggest challenge? Just getting poses that are exaggerated enough, given the limitations of this thing that only does what it can do.
Yeah, it's not just being like exaggerated, like for the sake of being exaggerated, right? It's just not like, I don't know. There's possibilities in the rig that you might want to explore even though they are not obvious. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Does that answer a question?
I think I'm understanding. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, you know, because, you know, a good example is the pitcher throwing the baseball in the what's the name of that one? The closer.
Yeah, the closer. Yeah.
Right. And I'm looking at that, and you have a great breakdown of that on your site. It's really cool. It's really interesting to look at. But it looks like so custom, like every, you know, like
yeah.
there's no way using a simple 3D rig or a 2D rig you could ever do anything like that, because you just don't have the leeway. So how do you get around that limitation when you're using a rig? Are there any tricks that you've kind of figured out over the years that can help make rigged animation still feel really good?
Well, the better the rig is, the better poses you get. Mm. That's why riggers are like, they're super important in 3D pieces. But like as far as animation goes, one advice that I would have is like that you are always like animating for the camera. And if it's working for the camera, that's it. Like your hand might be like broken, but it's not showing. That's fine. The camera is reading it, and so the audience will read it. So you don't really need to.
That's really good advice, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like a universal principle, I think, with any sort of animation, is that one frame may look funky, but when it plays,
oh, yeah.
it looks okay. That's fine,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And the funky frames are the best. Yeah.
So
yeah,
true.
It's funny, yeah. You know, like, because, you know, going through character animation boot camp, I mean, I'm basically a student. I don't have a background in this, and it's amazing to see how that one frame where the arms go from in
yeah.
front of the character to behind the character, that one frame is
yeah.
what makes the whole thing funny, you know, like
yeah.
It's little things like that. And it's funny, because I would assume, as kind of a novice at this, that using a rig would be easier than having to draw the frames, but it almost sounds like you'd prefer to have the freedom to draw.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
even like we were doing like a 3D piece at Giant, and we were actually considering for some frames to just like say like in the image sequence, we were considering like deleting some parts and just like redrawing them in Photoshop.
Mm.
So you get like a weird looking arm.
Wow, yeah, neat, yeah. neat. Well, you know, I, just to break in, Joey, I think if you have Enrique's drawing skills, then drawing is probably a more comfortable place to work, and more freedom than working with a rig. But if you're coming into character animation without those fully developed drawing skills, then working with a rigged puppet is actually sort of perversely going to be more freeing, because you don't have to struggle with the problems of drawing. And
that's absolutely true.
Yeah, because in hand-drawn animation, you don't have time to figure out how to draw something. You just have to be able to draw it, because you have to spend the time figuring out how to make it move and emote and have personality. So the drawing skills have to be just at your command. Basically, which is why good hand-drawn animation is rare, and good hand-drawn animators are rare, because you really have to have two big skills, really robust drawing skills, and then all the character animation skills.
That's really, that makes a lot of sense. And coming back a little bit to the 3D stuff, you know, that you talked about the Popeye CG movie that I think you're right, I think it did get killed. But I remember seeing the trailer for that, and it's amazing.
Yeah, that's on the rig, right?
I mean, yeah, and that's
the riggers there are almost, or maybe more important than the animators.
Yeah, I mean, they're like magicians, I'm assuming for the piece that's on your site, you rigged that yourself.
Yeah.
So that was
part of the course to learn like to rig and to model and all that.
Yeah, and so you were a little bit limited by just sort of your knowledge of rigging. So would you recommend, because you know, a lot of motion designers sort of just do it all themselves. You know, it's kind of that's very much part of the culture of like an After Effects artist. I'm just going to design it myself, animate myself. And it sounds like would you recommend, you know, if you're an animator, animate, let the riggers rig.
Yeah, I think I would. Mm. And before I used to be more like this too, like I started like in festivals and you see like independent shorts and then it's like an Enrique Baroni short and then like, you did everything and it feels good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Your piece. But then as you go, like it's also important to learn how to collaborate. Mm. And if you have people putting their strong skills in one project, that will make the project greater, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would definitely recommend to collaborate. Yeah. I mean, you like say for example, I don't really do After Effects. I know what it can be done, and I know how the software works, and I like, can do some stuff. But I'm not even close to what the guy at Giant do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we collaborate. I do more character, they do more After Effects or 3D, and then the piece is a group piece that it. He has everybody's personality and it looks unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would recommend, yeah, collaborating.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd agree with all of that. It makes a lot of sense. And I think that you kind of hinted at it that all you need to know is enough to be able to collaborate with the After Effects guy, right? You don't need to know After Effects. You just need to know, all right, After Effects likes this kind of file or I know After Effects can't do this, so I'm not going to ask Jorge to do that or whoever you're gonna,
right. And not to say that you don't need to like say like explore After Effects or like explore rigging, but I think you will, like as a career path, you will probably clash at some point if you try to be like an amazing rigger or an amazing animator.
Mm-hmm.
So I like say for that chart there, like the man who saw a boat, I got to rig a character and that was cool. I actually enjoyed it very much, but I don't know. I wouldn't take that path. Some people would, and I think it's better for a project if we, say, like me and the rigger, we meet and do something together.
Let me ask you this, because this is probably an interesting question. Do you think that someone who makes character rigs needs to understand how to animate? You think that's important?
Oh, very important, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the same thing we were talking about, like knowing that After Effects do this or that. I mean, I'm a better character design, character animator as a professional, not as an animator. If I know what comes down the pipeline and how the pipeline works and what comes before my job comes to the pipeline. So yeah, I think definitely like riggers, I'm like almost 100% sure that like the best riggers, they know what's going on with animation. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Awesome.
Or at least like they talk with the animators and they I don't know, they collaborate, mm-hmm. they give input to each other.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, that kind of covered it. Yeah.
Great. So let's just touch really quick on kind of, you know, some, we were talking about the process a little bit, and I think we covered it a little, but I think it would be good for this, for our students to hear just a little more about kind of getting down to the nuts and bolts of, okay, I'm sitting down and I've got a sequence of animation to create. I've got a character that's got to do X, Y, and Z. What's mm-hmm. the first thing you do? Do you start with thumbnails? Do you do research? Do you act it out? What do you do just to kind of start on your process?
Yeah, I kind of do thumbnails or it varies. Like for some stuff I do thumbnails, but I usually do like that sounds weird. Like I do like big thumbnails.
Okay.
So I don't really do like small drawings. I kind of use the timeline already. So it's like it's one step before rough,
mm-hmm.
rough animation.
Yeah,
it's just like sketching poses,
mm-hmm.
which yeah, it would be thumbnails. But I think I do them big.
Okay, sure, yeah. Big thumbnails.
And I kind of have the timelines. Yeah, exactly. And.
But you've already got the timeline in play. You're already starting to time them out.
I kind of have the timeline there, and then I can flip a little bit. Not flip, like just like
yeah,
just like go to one frame to the other.
Right.
like forth and back.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how I kind of start to have a sense of like where you can go, or like, and then I start tweaking. Yeah, maybe like acting it out, maybe yeah, checking references.
Sure.
Tweaking the pose, especially like a lot.
Yeah, and can you talk about that a little bit? What are you thinking about when you're tweaking a pose? What's going through your mind when you're looking at a pose, trying to make it better or stronger?
Yeah, I don't usually like act out like the action, but I act out a lot like the pose, and it's and I do that like to get the force. It's like, say my body weight is like is in this leg,
right?
Or I'm shifting my weight from here to here, and that's what it makes the pose like shift to that side a little bit,
right?
So it's, yeah, it's not that I'm acting out like the action, but I'm acting out the pose.
Okay, sure.
To get the forces, and by doing and then okay, I got an idea of how the pose feel, and then I tweak the pose, and then when I'm tweaking the pose, I also think about like silhouette and if it's reading well.
Right.
If I can push this hand a little more there, the leg a little more there. And yeah, I think those are the things I think the most.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Yeah.
And you said you're kind of working on timing kind of as you go. So that's, do you feel like that's one of the advantages of working in Flash, is that you can kind of instantly begin your timing as even in those early stages?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find that I do that quite a lot.
Yeah.
Like I said, I do thumbnails in the timeline, and then it's just already there.
Right, right. That's
but
great.
I don't want to sound like I'm stepping up the process. But
So you continue to adjust timing as you go.
Well, more at the beginning.
Okay.
But yeah, yeah. I also do like adjustments like towards the end.
Sure.
Like say like I'll put this frame on once. Like I can probably cut this frame or that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Well, and then now maybe stepping back to sort of the slightly bigger picture, how do you think about the performance of the character? How do you get the character to actually express emotions or attitudes or personality?
Well, that's the part where it starts to get a... You can't be technical there. There's no like, I don't know, just like easy out to that expression. It's that kind of comes back to drawing, right?
Right.
And not just drawing, but also, I don't know, I try to put myself in the mind of the character. And yeah, I try to think what the character is thinking and why is he moving this way. So say if it's like going from one point to the other, it's cool to think if he keeps looking back for a while. So that kind of like little things, like if he keeps looking back for a while, it kind of shows that he's like still interested in what he was looking at. So it's, he's making a decision, but he still has his mind a little bit there.
Right, right.
So, and it's like, oh, okay, the head look at back there for like 6-7 frames.
Right.
But that's the kind of stuff that shows like acting choices.
Right.
Instead of like, just like, quick look at you something is like, oh, I'm going to that way.
Right, right.
I know I'm doing it, and or you can go like, I need to go that way, but I don't really want. So you kind of start moving your body first, and your head stays there.
Right. Yeah.
And then you start like, I don't know, is the action controlling the animation in a way? So if the character is not sure that he wants to go to point B, but he needs to go anyway, you can start moving the body first and you can leave the head behind.
Right.
So that's a breakdown right there, right?
Sure.
So your body is moving first, but your head is staying. So it's like then technique meets performance, right?
Right, exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's a terrific example. Yeah, it's cool. It's something that
I'm glad I could do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a tricky thing, isn't it? Because I like to.
It's so tricky to talk about acting.
Yeah, right? Well, I tell my students all the time. You know, animation is a performing art. When mm-hmm. when you're an animator, you are an actor or a dancer or a pantomime yeah. or whatever, and you have to get into that mindset. So that was partly why I wanted to kind of pick your brain about that, is I wanted to kind of see how you get there. Because we all have to, right, to really make those characters come alive.
Totally.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So just a couple last questions kind of focused on, you know, people who are just getting into the world of character animation. When you're seeing kind of young animators or people just starting out, what's the biggest mistake or bad habit that you see kind of beginner animators make?
I don't know. I think I would come down to the process thing. Mm. Like you can see when something was like rushed,
mm-hmm.
or that the person tried to cut corners mm-hmm. in a bad way.
Right.
And that's actually what makes Flash be like flashy. The bad thing that people say about Flash is that it's so easy. Yeah, just like do a hand here and twin that all over. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
And so I think that's the thing that strikes me the most. And also, that's the most obvious thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I try to look at, and also like when I do, is to not like twin stuff. So never have your two hands or two feet like touching something at the same time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like those little offsets
mm-hmm.
that add so much to the character and to how natural it feels.
Yes.
That I mean, I like to see that.
Sure.
And I don't know. It's not a thing that I've learned. It wasn't like the first thing that I've learned.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably have that even in my films.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And that's one thing that I also think about, like we're talking about the process. So I go and I think about the pose and like where the force is, and then I tweak the pose, and then later on in the process I think about like, okay, this hand is touching first and then the other hand is touching a little bit later.
Right.
And
do you think it's hard to find good character animators? Do you guys see a lot of good work coming in the door or
Oh yeah, I think there's lots of good stuff. Yeah. And like I said, there's no actually going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're doing a piece that the art direction requires that kind of like weird looking animation,
right,
there's this guy there. Or like if you need something that is more like precise and all that, mm-hmm. there's people that can do it, and it depends on the project, right?
Right, absolutely, sure.
Of course, you can tell if it's I don't know, say if it's lacking something, or if it's if it could be the timing could be better, or the kind of stuff. You can, but I wouldn't say that's right or wrong. Right?
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure.
There's definitely people to do like everything, I think.
Right, right. What do you look for in a junior animator, you know, that you want to bring on board a project? What would you look for in their reel or in their work?
The thing I like to see like good timing in the animation, and like I said, like easy ins and easy outs, and like that kind of offset, the, like mm-hmm. like little details.
Yeah.
But I also like to see like variety.
Mm, yeah.
Like I think if you can do like one animation that is like super choppy and like say like it's on fours or
mm-hmm.
characters super weird, and then you can also do like a super smooth animation like that it's I don't know, more like precise looking,
mm-hmm.
and you can kind of like be okay with both. I think that's a really good thing for an animator to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And it might come back to the festival thing that is like variety is like, yeah, what makes it cool.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Yeah.
Well, if if we're talking to a motion design person, for example, who wants to kind of add character to their reel, kind of wants to get into them, what advice would you give them? Where would you tell them to start? Where would you tell them to go? Would you tell them to go to school? Would you tell them to get a book? What would you say to someone who's kind of getting started on this path?
Well, it's easy to say for me to go to school because that's how my path went.
Sure.
And I enjoy it very much. And my personality, I kind of need to be on a class. I don't think I would be able to like self-taught myself. Mm-hmm. I like to be in the class and then have an assignment.
Sure.
I learn better that way, but there's people that they can self-taught.
Right.
And not that you need to be in a class, but like say like a course, like, yeah. Like an online course, like you guys. Yeah. And
but some kind of structure.
Some kind of structure, exactly. If you can structure that yourself, I don't know, put yourself like some assignments,
mm-hmm.
and try to keep track on them, and like, I don't know, maybe try to find a mentor online, but
mm-hmm.
I would say it's good to have like a structure, like a class, or
yeah.
I learned that way, and especially like the progression of assignments, I think that's really important. Like to start like the bouncing ball, and then that's timing,
right?
And then you can add like a tail to the bouncing ball, and I'm kind of getting overlap here.
Right,
that's how it works. Like I see a lot of people like starting with character, and like to do a character walk, that's still for me one of the hardest things.
Yes, yeah.
And I don't know, people start with walk cycles.
Yeah.
Not sure that's.
I think that's crazy too. I've always, I 100% agree. I've always thought, yeah. Why start with something so subtle and so complex?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also and it's also something that isn't really very much like a lot of other character animation, because it's sort of all these just repeating cycles, whereas most of the time you're kind of doing more sequential, more storytelling. Yeah. So yeah, I've always thought it's a weird place to start.
No, and I think it's super easy to get frustrated.
Yeah.
Because to get like a personality in a walk cycle is not that easy.
No, it's not. It's not.
I mean, you might get your character walking, but then it looks robotic and it's like, animation is too hard. I don't really like it.
Yeah.
And then you kind of gave up, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Walk cycles are,
they're tough.
It's actually hard.
Yeah, we're
to get like a nice personality walk cycle.
Absolutely,
right?
we're doing one in this class, but we're doing it a little later on after doing some more basic stuff.
Cool.
And Joey also has this wonderful course called Animation Boot Camp, which is all the fundamentals that you're talking about, the bouncing balls and the basics of timing. So it makes kind of a good 1-2 if you do those basics, and then you start looking at character and getting involved with doing character stuff. Maybe a final question.
Yeah, the one thing. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, the one thing that I remember like learning, and that makes a lot of sense for me, is I think it's a good way if you try to see like everything in animation like being a bouncing ball. So like when you're doing a walk cycle, your hips is just like a bouncing ball going up and down.
Right, right.
And so is your hand, and so is your head. And then if you have the bouncing ball principle, like if you're understanding it, you're just like applying that to other stuff, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. A jump is basically a bouncing ball with arms and legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great.
It sounds easy or I don't know. That's just this, but it comes down to that.
Yeah. Well, it's true. What you said before is really true. The principles themselves are relatively simple. It gets complicated when you start to layer them on top of one another, and you've got a figure with all these different moving parts. But at its base, those fundamental principles are not that complex.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. That's great. I just the very last question I had, and maybe we've kind of already touched on it, but if you could like grab your young self when you were just starting out and whisper something in your ear, what is it about character animation that you wish you had known, or you wish somebody had told you way back when you were starting out?
That's hard. I don't know. I might sound a bit too depressing here, but I would say like to just have fun.
Yeah, that's actually great. That's actually great advice.
I don't know. I mean, I was thinking about some like techniques and stuff that I should have learned before. Yeah. Or, like, I don't know. I think if you're having fun doing it, it will happen like sooner or later.
Right, right. If you love it and you enjoy it, you're going to get good at it, right?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great, great.
We can end on a positive note.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. Yeah. Well, Enrique, thank you so much for talking to us. This has been fantastic.
You guys. Yeah.
And good luck with all your work in the future. Really fun to hear from an artist with such a unique perspective on both the worlds of character animation and motion design. Some of the terms that you heard that you may not have been familiar with include antic. You may have heard Enrique talk about antic. Antic is simply the mispronounced abbreviation of anticipation. The classical character animators would write on their exposure sheets where they would plot out the timing of their animation. They would write anticipation and they would abbreviate it by just writing A-N-T-I-C, antic. And so in the world of classical animation, that became the term, is just to say antic. Well, he starts here, antic, and then moves forward. So it was essentially just a kind of a shorthand from that abbreviation. And nobody would say it was saying antis, which I guess sounds kind of gross. So antic. So that was that term. And then you may have also heard him say cush in to a pose. That's again an old-fashioned abbreviation. Cushion was what many of the kind of traditional animators would call easing in. Instead of saying ease into a pose or slow into a pose, they would say cushion in to the pose or cushion out. And cush would be the abbreviation on the exposure sheet, C-U-S-H, cush. So some animators trained in the classical style, and Enrique went to the Vancouver Film School, which is a very traditionally based, very classical program. So he was learning all of those terms. So antic, cush to pose, that's classic animator, old-fashioned animator shorthand for anticipation, ease into the next pose. Antic, cush to pose. Okay, so just some fun little terms there. Oh, and one of the other ones he mentioned was breakdown. He talked about getting your poses and then doing your breakdowns. And you might have wondered what he meant by that. In hand-drawn animation, there's a subtle distinction made between the actual extreme key poses that the animator creates and the very critical first in-betweens in between those key poses. Those in-betweens in between the main key poses for an assistant animator or an in-betweener would often become key drawings because the animator would often do those drawings. And those first in-betweens are critical for shaping how a movement is going to look and behave. And because that particular drawing was so important, it was called the breakdown. So you do your keys, and then many times the actual lead animator would do the breakdown, or would maybe do a sketch of the breakdown. So the breakdown, quote unquote, is really just the first in between. Now, in the process that I'm teaching you, we're not using drawings, we're using keyframes in After Effects, and we're letting After Effects do the in-betweening. But we can't let After Effects do the breakdown. Or if we let After Effects do that breakdown, that in-betweening, in-between right in the middle of the movement, we're going to shape it, we're going to finesse it, we're going to tweak it. But in most cases, we're simply going to turn it into a key pose. And a perfect example of this would be the jump that we are creating with squash and stretch. The jumps include poses where he pushes off the ground and where he catches himself that technically are the breakdowns between the pose where he's floating up in the air and where he's squished back on the ground. Now again, in our process, since we can't rely on the intelligence of After Effects to give us the right pose, we usually have to make that breakdown pose, and it allows us to give the movement the kind of flow and shape we want it to. There'll be more on this as we continue through the course, but just to make sure you guys understand, we won't be using the term breakdown because we're not using drawings, but we will be paying very close attention to how we get from one extreme pose to another, and we will be finessing the movement in between the same way a hand-drawn animator would finesse the breakdowns in between the key drawings.